More than 2,500 years ago in ancient Babylon, God gifted a Hebrew man to understand the future through dreams and visions so that he could foresee all the way to the end of the age. Daniel chapters 7 through 12 provide us with the most comprehensive view of future world history found anywhere in the Old Testament. These mysteries of Babylon unveil God's plan for the ages, help us understand the present world in which we live, and prepare us for the return of Jesus Christ. What God knows about the future, He is also willing to share with us. Prophecies recorded in the ancient book of Daniel are more relevant today than they ever have been. I'm Ron Jones, and this is Something Good.
Hello, I'm Brian Davis, and you're listening to Something Good with Dr. Ron Jones, lead pastor at Atlantic Shores Baptist Church in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Always glad to have you with us. Coming up next, Ron launches his brand new teaching series, Mysteries of Babylon, how the prophecies of Daniel prepare us for the return of Jesus Christ. We begin in Daniel chapter 7, one of the most fascinating prophetic books in all of Scripture. Some of what Daniel prophesied has already taken place, but much still lies in the future. So, today, let's talk about tomorrow. Come see us at somethinggoodradio.org to listen to the broadcast on demand on your schedule. That's somethinggoodradio.org. You can also listen and subscribe to the podcast at Spotify or wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Now, from Daniel 7, here's Ron with today's Something Good radio message. What God knows about future world history.
Most of us are too busy with today's worries to even think about tomorrow. Isn't that true? We kind of live with our head down and focused on what's in front of us right now. I kind of think the devil likes it that way, because that way he can sort of numb us to any spiritual sensitivities. Last thing the devil wants is for us to slow down enough to lift up our eyes and see that the fields are white unto harvest. Even Jesus had to, shock the disciples' attention a little bit. Guys, lift up your eyes. Look out there and see those fields that are white unto harvest. The last thing the devil wants us to do is also lift up our eyes and anticipate the soon return of Jesus Christ. But more than 2,500 years ago, God gave a man named Daniel, who was living in the Babylonian Empire, gave him the ability to interpret visions and dreams. He gave Daniel a panoramic view of future world history from the time of the Babylonian Empire all the way to the end of the age and to the return of Jesus Christ and the establishment of his kingdom on this earth. And it is one of the most exciting rides through Bible prophecy and future world history. The book of Daniel is, and especially Daniel chapters 7 through 12. Today I'm beginning, actually continuing a series of messages from the book of Daniel, but we're packaging it and titling it and pointing it in the direction that the text takes us in chapters 7 through 12. We're calling it Mysteries of Babylon, because these dreams and visions that Daniel received, the interpretation came by the revelation of God. And that's the only way we would understand these things. And Daniel chapters 7 through 12 contain, again, some of the most exciting and most riveting future world history and insights into it found anywhere in the Bible. Dr. John Walvoord, who is a Bible prophecy expert, he says in his book on Daniel that the vision of Daniel 7 provides the most comprehensive and detailed prophecy of future events to be found anywhere in the Old Testament. That's just Daniel chapter 7. But 7 through 12 contains four specific visions that Daniel received. We have Daniel 7, Daniel 8, Daniel 9, specifically verses 24 to 27, and then 10 through 12 contains the last vision. Daniel chapter 6, which we've studied up to this point, contains mostly history with a little bit of prophecy, all right? And Daniel, through his life and his example, taught us how to stand courageous in our faith. But in Daniel chapters 7 through 12, we have mostly prophecy and a little bit of historical references in there. Understand that Daniel 7 through 12, the four specific visions that Daniel received about future world history, those visions were given to him during the same historical time period that is covered in chapters 1 to 6. It was really about 22 years over which Daniel received these visions during the reigns of Belshazzar, the king, and followed by Darius the Mede and Cyrus the Persian. It was during the reign of those kings that Daniel received these visions, which is why Daniel chapter 7 and verse 1 begins this way. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. Then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter. Daniel declared, "I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up against the great sea." The first thing that Daniel saw was chaos and tribulation and difficulty on planet Earth. This is seen in the four winds of heaven that are stirring up the great sea of humanity. And Daniel sees in this vision great chaos on planet Earth. He goes on in verse 3, "And four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. And then I looked, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And the mind of a man was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second one like a bear. It was raised up on one side. It had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and it was told, 'Arise, devour much flesh.' After this, I looked, and behold, another like a leopard with four wings of a bird on its back. And the beast had four heads, and dominion was given to it. And after this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before which three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things." So Daniel in this vision sees the four winds of heaven causing turbulence and turmoil and chaos on planet Earth. And out of the great sea of humanity arise four beasts, four animals, four sea monsters, we might call them. Now, the description of these sea monsters are unlike any other animal you see in the animal kingdom. I mean, there are references to animals that we all can imagine, a lion, a bear, a leopard, and so forth. But these are ferocious-looking animals. It's best to understand and to come at this in Daniel chapter 7 by also laying alongside Daniel 7, Daniel chapter 2. Because the vision that Daniel receives here is the same vision with slightly different symbolism that King Nebuchadnezzar received in Daniel chapter 2. Remember the giant colossus image? Remember Nebuchadnezzar, who was sleepless in Babylon, and he saw this giant image with the head of gold, the chest and arms of silver, the belly and thigh of bronze, the legs of iron, and the feet that were a mixture of iron and clay. And it was a panorama of world history, starting with the Babylonian Empire, the head of gold, overtaken by the Medo-Persian Empire, the chest of arms and silver, eventually overtaken by the Grecian Empire, which was the belly of bronze and the thigh of bronze, and then ultimately the Roman Empire, the iron fist of the Roman Empire, and then the mixture of clay and iron at the feet was a picture of the revived Roman Empire. And then a stone came out of nowhere and smashed into the feet, and that stone grew into a large empire, a picture of the second coming of Jesus Christ destroying the revived Roman Empire at the end of the age. That was the dream of Nebuchadnezzar. And that dream was symbolized from man's perspective. It had with it all the trappings of the ego of King Nebuchadnezzar and every world ruler that would come after him, you know, picturing themselves in this mighty, colossal image, this giant statue. Now Daniel gets a vision of the same panorama of world empires and world history, only this time it's from God's perspective. And as God views the rising and the falling of these world empires, he doesn't see them as mighty and strong and egomaniac. He sees them as ferocious and vicious regimes, as beasts that rise up from the sea of humanity and bring great destruction. Again, starting with the Babylonians, followed by the Medo-Persians, the Grecian Empire, and then ultimately the Roman Empire. I've given you a chart in your notes there, and let me just comment real briefly on them. Beast number one in Daniel's vision comes up like a winged lion. We know from archaeology that a winged lion was one of the symbols of the Babylonian Empire, as was the gold, which was the head of gold in the Colossus image in Nebuchadnezzar's dream. This winged lion, his wings are clipped, Daniel says in chapter 7. A picture of what happened to King Nebuchadnezzar, who lost his mind and lost his kingdom, eventually gained it back. Following that is a bear, a ferocious bear that rises up. This is no teddy bear. This is a ferocious beast of an empire. We know it as the Medo-Persian Empire that overtook the Babylonian Empire. And this is corresponding to the chest and arm of silver. And then the third beast is a winged leopard. The leopard in the animal kingdom is one of the swiftest animals. And putting four wings on this animal makes it even faster. Everybody knows from history how swift and how fast Alexander the Great's armies were under the Grecian Empire, and here's a picture of that. And then comes this fourth beast, unlike any of the others. It is a horned brute that arises up out of the sea of humanity, again corresponding to the legs of iron. This is the mighty Roman Empire.
Still ahead, the second half of today's message with Dr. Ron Jones. So stay with us. Listen to Ron's messages on demand at somethinggoodradio.org. That's somethinggoodradio.org. When you stop by, be sure to check out Starting Point, A Disciple's First Steps, a free online discipleship coaching experience created by Dr. Ron Jones. Use the Courses tab at the top of the homepage at somethinggoodradio.org. That's Starting Point, A Disciple's First Steps. Many of the past world empires have disappeared from the face of the earth, but the Roman Empire was merely broken into pieces, leaving open the possibility that it will one day be revived. Here's Ron with the rest of today's Something Good radio message, What God Knows About Future World History.
Go back to verse 7. Daniel says, after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left of its feet. It was different from all the beasts that went before it, and it had 10 horns. In Daniel's vision, this beast had 10 horns. In Nebuchadnezzar's dream, it had 10 toes. Same dream, same vision, same panorama of world history. Same revived Roman Empire, as many scholars have understood this to be. There's much consensus among Bible teachers, by the way, that nothing like this description has happened in human history. That is the 10 horns, the 10 toes, followed by a little horn that pops up and overtakes three of them to seize world dominion and power. This is a picture of the future world dominating leader known as the Antichrist, that little horn. But there's nothing like this has happened in history. We can go back in time and see the Babylonian Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, the Grecian Empire, yes, the mighty Roman Empire. By the way, the mighty Roman Empire never went away in totality. It never disappeared from the face of this earth. It broke up into a lot of pieces. Remember the stone that came, smashed the feet, broke it up into pieces? And that's what happened early on in the Roman Empire when it fell. But the pieces of it are still out there. The Roman Empire, having never completely disappeared from the face of the earth as other ancient kingdoms did, have left the possibility for the wheels to be in motion to gather up those broken pieces into a revived empire. As recently as 2012, I came across this article written by a journalistic publication called Vox Europe, and they reported the following in an article titled, 10 Countries for a United States of Europe. This is in 2012. It says, 10 EU foreign ministers participating in a study group for the future of Europe aim to exert pressure to transform the EU into a federation along the lines of the US. Together they have prepared what the front page headline in Die Presse, another journalistic publication, describes as, quote, a plan for transformation into a European state. All I'm saying is that people have been talking for a long time about the revival of the Roman Empire in the form of these 10 horns or 10 nation states and 10 kings. The EU is much larger today, but there's a lot of documentation out there, even other articles that talk about the 10 major nations of the EU. And this is coming clearly into focus even during our time. Verse 8, Daniel says again, I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before which three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things. Now, at this point, Daniel doesn't know the interpretation. He doesn't know the interpretation until we pick it up again in verse 15, where Daniel asks for an interpretation. And in the middle of that, between verse 8 and verse 15, the scene shifts from earth and this panorama of future world history to what's going on in heaven. And we get a vision of the Ancient of Days and of the Son of Man. Let's read on in verse 9. As I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames, its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire issued and came out from before him. 1,000 thousands served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were opened. Now, a lot of times when you're reading Bible prophecy, if you were sitting in front of a computer and you were seeing these images, it's good to have kind of a split screen. And that's kind of what's happening here in the text. One part of the screen is what's happening on earth. And Daniel sees nothing but chaos. Chaos over the panorama of world history, you know, leading up to the second coming of Jesus Christ. But the other part of the screen is what's happening in heaven. I was watching a documentary over the weekend. It's getting close to Easter, and so this documentary was titled Jesus Countdown to Calvary. And it reminded me again of just how, you know, when people look at the Bible and they look at the life of Jesus Christ, they see it from man's perspective, or you can see it from God's perspective. And this documentary was very interesting because it went to all the places that we visit in Israel, and I felt like I was there again, and I recognized a lot of the sites and a lot of the archaeological digs and all that that bring the Bible to light. But the angle of this particular documentary at the end was simply this. It was asking the question, why did Jesus die 2,000 years ago? What actually happened? And their whole angle was all about the political intrigue going on in Jerusalem at Passover time and the politics of Caiaphas and the politics of Pilate. And at the end of the day, this itinerant Jewish preacher just got on the wrong side of politics and ended up being crucified by the Romans. Well, I can understand that if you just have man's perspective on it. If you just look from a human point of view, I can understand that. But when you look at God's perspective, when you read the prophecies of old that predict all of that, when you read through the Gospels and pay attention to those places where Jesus talked about how he would go up to Jerusalem and be killed by the religious leaders and the chief priests and all of that, it went in one ear and out the other of the disciples. They didn't quite get it. Not to mention the commentary of the New Testament writers who, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, are interpreting for us all that happened in Jerusalem in that fateful week. You can either look at all this from man's perspective and get all puffed up like Nebuchadnezzar and his successors did and think you're all that, or you can see it from God's perspective. And from God's perspective, he sees ferocious, vicious empires that devastate the world. And also from God's perspective, while all of this chaos is happening on earth throughout human history and as it intensifies up to the second coming of Jesus Christ, we get a glimpse of what's going on in heaven. Isn't that great?
Did you know that nearly half of all prophecies in the Bible have already come to pass? Yet another reason for us to fall on our knees and worship the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Blessed be his holy name. You've been listening to Something Good with Dr. Ron Jones and his teaching series, Mysteries of Babylon. Thanks for spending part of your busy day here with us. Ron joins me now to talk about his latest book, one that just might revolutionize your prayer life. Ron, so excited about the release of your book, The Jesus Way to Pray, An Intimate Journey Through the Lord's Prayer. What inspired you to write this book?
Thanks for the question, Brian. You know, I think all of us, no matter how long we've been following Jesus, can use some help with our prayer life. I know I can, and I'm supposed to be a professional at this, right? I can totally understand why the disciples approached Jesus and asked him to teach them how to pray. Fortunately, the model prayer Jesus gave his disciples is recorded for us in the pages of Scripture and preserved for nearly 2,000 years. It's known worldwide as the Lord's Prayer. I call it the Jesus Way to Pray.
Ron, you say in the introduction to the book, nobody is in a better position to teach us how to pray than Jesus. What do you mean by that?
Well, Brian, to say, Lord, teach us to pray, as Jesus' disciples did, is kind of like asking Michael Jordan or LeBron James to teach us how to play the game of basketball, or Leonardo da Vinci to teach us how to paint a masterpiece like The Last Supper or the Mona Lisa, or Michelangelo to teach us how to sculpt a marble stone into David or the Pietà. Truly, nobody is in a better position to teach us how to pray than Jesus.
Thanks so much for sharing this important resource with us, Pastor. Again, that book is called The Jesus Way to Pray, An Intimate Journey Through the Lord's Prayer. Order your copy for a donation of $25 or more. Share it with a friend by requesting a 2-pack for $50, a 4-pack for $75, or an 8-pack for $150 or more. Give online at somethinggoodradio.org or over the phone by calling our offices at 757-276-1099 or mail your gift to P.O. Box 6245, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23456.
He will attack the beliefs and the traditions of the times. It says he will change the times and the law. You know, a lot of our calendar, even today, is governed by religious holidays and religious traditions, Christmas, Easter, Hanukkah, you name it. I mean, we still observe that worldwide. The world and the wheels of commerce come to a stop even on Christmas Day, and the world focuses on Bethlehem. I take this to mean that the Antichrist will change all of that. He will cast aside religious traditions and the times and the seasons and the laws.
What will the end of the world as we know it look like? Find out tomorrow in part two of Dr. Ron Jones' message, What God Knows About Future World History. For Ron and the entire team here at Something Good Radio, I'm Brian Davis saying so long and thanks for listening.